Dark Wings.
Dork Words.
A Game of Thrones podcast.
Season 2, Episode 8.
The Prince of Winterfell.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Chuck Davis, and with me this week are...
Not Phil Jonak.
Thank God. We can finally...
Well, he's 6 feet under, so... He's not.
He's not living anymore, so...
Craig McCallie.
Mike Hergert.
So, where do we come in this week? With Theon... watching Yara ride into Winterfell, and it's a weird thing. He seems like overwhelmed somehow by the number of horses and then instantly underwhelmed.
Yeah, I think it was overwhelmed by their hoofbeats. I would hate to see what would have happened if she would have brought 500. I think he would have died. Heart palpitations, heart attack right there.
He would have had to stand there gobsmacked as they rode around him for nigh on an hour. I like that scene. Yara, once again, effectively put Theon
in his place.
Well, I mean, she admonished him for his foolishness. Of course, Theon didn't really intend to kill the Stark boys. He only had to pretend to kill them for lack of being able to recapture them. So he's not quite as big an idiot as Yara believes him to be. One thing that bothers me is Balon Greyjoy's intent to invade the North seemed like he was all for let's take and hold these castles. But now Yara's like, why would you want to stay in Winterfell? It's so far away from the sea.
I mean, doesn't he want to be, king of everything as far as I'm concerned?
Yeah, I mean, at least
the whole North, so... Why would you not want to take the biggest, baddest keep there is?
Well, she seems to be blaming it, like saying he has to return to Pyke with her. Their father is calling them back because since he's killed the two Starks in Winterfell, everybody in the North wants to kill him. Well, they would have wanted to kill him just for taking the castle in the first place. They kind of want to kill her for taking Torrhen Square in the first place.
Or Deepwood Mott or whatever.
That argument doesn't hold water with me.
It's a little strange, yeah. No one's going to want to kill you when you invade their lands, right? I mean, no, don't kill us. We're going to run away now. Doesn't.
Well, and she's all like hard about being ironborn and tough and kicking ass and not whining about anything. But then she gives him a hard time for killing a couple of prisoners. It doesn't seem fair. You can't have it both ways. You're either a badass who takes no prisoners and doesn't care, or
you're not.
Or you're a little girl who gets choked up when your baby brother stops crying.
What's it going to be, Toots?
She was definitely both.
But it was nice for her to show a glimpse of compassion or at least sisterly interest in her sibling.
Yeah. I think this episode had a higher TMR on purpose because of all the action we're going to see next week. Tender moments ratio, if you were wondering.
Oh, I thought it was too much rationalization.
No. It was a very heartfelt and reflective episode. Everyone just thought back and...
You last week were sort of lamenting the slowness or staleness of the action, but this week was very much a setting up the final chapters, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely.
Everything was all... Well, a couple events happened, but for the most part, it was all set up for things that are about to happen.
For huge events that are going to happen.
One of which I was glad to see was the way that Jon Snow was brought under the...
Rattle shirt.
Under
Wildlings.
Yeah, the way that whole exchange happened. We finally got an explanation of sorts for why John wasn't able to reconnect with the other Rangers. And we got Ygritte sort of saved John's life and said now we're even because Rattleshirt was all keen on killing him.
And, yeah, I guess in the books it just all kind of happens.
Well, things happen.
Well, Ygritte, in a different order a little bit. And, I mean, the events are going to be somewhat different.
I think it played out better in the book, to be honest. The key development that we did get to see was Corrin Halfhand rapidly, just almost offhandedly, planting the seed of the idea in John's mind that he should be a double agent for the Night's Watch and pretend to switch sides with the wildlings. And then he pushes John down a slope before he even has time to
process anything.
Exactly.
Yep. Hurry up offense.
But the way it happens in the book, you know, it may still happen. It probably will still happen, so I won't say anything. But because a lot of, you know, my griping about some things, like they're getting around to wrapping up some loose ends or reestablishing some motivations and stuff that I was needing for my own understanding of the way things happen. In their own time, they're coming around to things like the way that Catelyn set Jaime Lannister loose.
Which I think the way she did that at the end of last week's episode, even like from what I had read and some other stuff, people thought a totally different event, which eventually happens in the book, was going to happen instead of him getting let loose.
I know what you're not saying.
Good.
But
wink,
I didn't.
Wink, wink.
Right.
Did you think that, Craig? Do you know what we're talking about? Don't say it.
No, I won't. I wasn't sure.
It could have got. I mean, the way that they've changed things, they could easily have overreached. But that didn't happen. So, and that was cool that essentially happened off screen. I mean, it's easy to fill in the blanks. This is a great case of them not over explaining, you know, and the way it happened. Well, you know, so Rob is strolling, chatting with his field surgeon girlfriend.
Are they on the way to the crag
they're
at
not,
that point?
No,
that doesn't.
Apparently, they're on their way back from the crag.
Okay.
I assumed that they were on their way. They were taking their sweet ass time. That's for sure. But the guy rides up, and then, boom, they're back in camp, and Rob is all high and mighty, admonishing. That's my word of the week, admonishing. Last week it was implication. I said implication way too many times last week. But, yeah, Rob kind of brings the hammer down on his mom. It puts her in her place. She knows she's in the wrong, sort of. I mean, I was waiting for her to say, but Lord Karstark would have killed him anyway. So one way or the other, we were going to lose our hostage. But Karstark was pissed off enough already, and she perhaps wisely held her tongue in
that
regard.
Well, she wasn't apologetic enough, I mean, in my opinion. She really did a thing.
Well, she felt like she did the right thing. She basically stated her case fairly well. She's like, you know, Lord Karstark, you killing the Kingslayer won't bring your sons back, but me letting him go might bring my daughters back. And it makes sense
to me.
At least
get something.
That's what Rob should
say. Although it's not your son.
Hey, at least we get something.
My sisters and not your son.
And that, again, you know, Rob says send 40 more horses, 40 more men with their fastest horses. Cut to a couple horses running away, and Brienne and the Kingslayer share some of their delightful banter.
Their tender moments.
She finds that canoe fairly conveniently.
Yeah.
When she pushed off with the oar, you know, the two of them sat in that boat, and they're heavy. Like, she's climbing into that thing, covered in armor, poking her sword down into the hole and all that, and she just kind of effortlessly pushes it off.
Gingerly, yeah.
She's a big, strong gal.
I pictured, like, six grips pulling on the other side of that boat to get the thing moving. But that was all good stuff, really. Brienne and Jaime.
They're going to have quite the, you know, witty banter for many, many moons to come here.
Well, honest, the banter they had in the books was entertaining, but fairly repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
So they really boiled that all down to like 2 minutes of screen time very effectively.
But I guess the point in the book is, I mean, Jaime obviously just keeps doing it because the kids are mad. So
Yeah, he's again, just like he did when he was in captivity, pushing people's buttons, trying to make something happen. Wisely. I mean, the truth is he's not afraid of getting killed, really.
No, not at all.
He's a tough guy, but he's not really a happy guy. I mean, he's in love with his sister, which is a source of great complication in his life.
He's done all sorts of shady shit. I mean, it's kind of anything he's ever done of note has been completely shady.
I don't know. He's not that shady, honestly.
Well, I mean...
Well, his shadiest thing was he killed the king he was sworn to protect.
Who was batshit crazy.
Yeah.
But half the kingdom had risen up against him because he was a bad king.
Still a shady practice, man. Regicide, fratricide, infanticide. Not that he did any of those, but, you know,
well, those are shady things. The thing was, Jaime entered into the king's guard not out of a purity of purpose or nobility. He did it to be close to Cersei and to spite his father. But they haven't really gotten to that.
So it's the king's fault.
I guess, we'll find out more about Jaime. This is one of the fundamental surprises of A Song of Ice and Fire, when Jaime becomes a POV character. And it's like, what? He's like one of the biggest villains in the book, and we're supposed to all of a sudden identify with this guy or, you know, see things from his perspective.
And you do.
It's pretty great. I mean, it's hard. It gets harder and harder to reconcile the Jaime that you get to know with the Jaime that carelessly pushed Bran out a window to murder that adorable young wolf. There's something about the eyes of frightened children that just tugs on my heartstrings. Or, you know, and just seeing Bran listening to Osha and Maester Luwin talking there at the end, you know, just know, I mean, he's not even emoting. He's just, all you know is that he's awake and he's hearing that the farmer's boys died for him, and that's something they wanted to spare him, and he's just, you know, the depth of his plight is
great.
Palpable. That's my other word of the week. So I love that. I mean, above all else, the show brings emotion to the story. You know, after a while reading the books, it's a thrilling adventure story, but there's still kind of like a detached distance to it, because there is an awful lot of horrible things depicted. Man's inhumanity to man on a horrific level.
And it's different to imagine it than it is to
violence
actually
and
see
cruelty,
it.
And it's, you don't really feel it because you don't see it depicted. It's not the gore, the crispy corpses that gets to me. It's just the suffering of the innocent, that
the betrayal, stuff like that.
The actors are good at making it emotional and making you invested in their plight or lack thereof.
Whatever their adventure may be.
There you go.
Choose your what do you think, Phil? He's not here.
Well, after the conversation, we kind of go to, we got Arya and Tywin.
So once again, I was a little tired of seeing Arya just going around the table pouring drinks for another one of Lord Tywin's war councils. But they got right to the point, and they're like, okay, let's, Robb Stark is this and that, and they're getting fed up. And they decide to march immediately, and she looks...
She's like, oh shit, I need to name my third name.
It's clear that she wants Lord Tywin to be her third name.
Especially after, hearing his plans, obviously.
I think if there were any question, we kind of talked last week about, does someone know something? Does Lord Tywin know anything about her identity? And, I mean, we knew that he couldn't for the plot's sake, but he still, there were some kind of weird oversharing, and he had said a couple things about knowing she was highborn, she was from the north. I mean, that narrows it down a lot.
But clearly, I don't think they wanted to go there. I don't know why they wasted the time.
It was a waste. They shouldn't have done it.
Because, well, I guess it's exciting and all, but it was a misdirection.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of, oh, is he gonna you know, is she gonna be found out or whatever? I can see how that.
I mean, otherwise it would have just been Arya in the kitchens, you know, slaving away with no really any important plot points at all. So,
but he clearly had no idea,
right? Because he wouldn't have.
Peter Baelish might have, but that's all going to be moot now because. They escape at the end of this episode.
They didn't really put it this way, but in the book they kind of do. Like, she has an easier time laying low than... Like, she doesn't even... She never comes that close to being discovered in the books.
No.
Right.
People just... The Highborn don't even see the servants.
Yeah. I mean, Tywin was still at Harrenhal in the book. He was just off in some tower. They never saw him there. They never talked about him really being there. You know, they didn't focus on it, I guess.
Yeah. I really wish they would have played out the series of events in Harrenhal a little more closely to the book. Like,
with the escape part, especially? Or
Right. There's a whole different thing that happens with Jaqen and H'ghar and the third name that leads to Arya becoming a cupbearer for someone different.
Right.
And they're just not going to go there. And... It's okay, I guess. I'm sure it simplifies things to a degree, but it still is too bad because that was some good stuff.
Yeah, it was with the hot soup and
weasel soup. We'll never get to see the weasel soup.
I'm glad they had the conversation where she tells him to kill himself, basically. Though
that's true, and I had forgotten that that's how that played out.
Yeah, there was no third.
It's a brilliant play by Arya. To leverage what little influence she has to get what she wants.
It's hard to know what the genie's rules are. Can I wish for more wishes? How far can I bend it here? She names him. And in the book, I think it just says she came and whispers a name in his ear. I don't think they ever said what she said.
Yeah.
But you know, clear. Yeah,
because he's like, oh, I can't.
He's like, oh, come on. Take it back.
It bothers me how plainly she's like, oh, have you seen Jaqen? I need to find Jaqen. He's helping me with something. Yeah. It's like, way to be discreet.
Keep that shit on.
And then all the conversations she has with him are like in broad daylight in the middle of the yard. That annoys me because they were so much better at
cloak and dagger.
Keeping it on the DL.
Shadowy stuff.
But. That's all right. I mean, what they're doing and is still
we got to see good story. We got to see Hot Pie again. He's back.
I was glad to get a little
waxing little and whining about sour cherries.
Does she say you have to help us escape? Does she say help me and my friends escape?
I think so.
He replied,
does he just say you and your friends
be at the gate at midnight? Yeah.
So did he assume that she wanted to escape with her friends?
Probably.
She didn't specifically say, I want to escape with Gendry and Hot Pie. She says, help us escape, right?
Maybe, yeah, I think so.
Something and like I think he probably knows because they hung out all the time when they were on their way to the wall.
Speaking of who people were hanging out with on their way to the wall, we get to see Biter and Rorge again.
Yeah, for a moment.
And it's clear that they have fallen in with the Lannister troops. Yeah. I mean, the Mountain's men specifically, because they're all a bunch of bastards eager to go kill some wolves or whatever. But that was well established. And I believe the fact that we see the two of them go, and we know that Lord Tywin has tasked Clegane with finding and killing the Brotherhood Without Banners, that I think we're going to see what you were alluding to.
Right. But it's going to be, yeah. Okay, yep.
You know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Boom. Do you all know what we're talking about?
Is this anything anybody
wants to hopefully not, because we're not going to spoil it here.
We got to see... Are we wrapping that up? We got to see a Dragonglass cache that we thought we weren't going to see.
Yes. And I'm okay. I wish we would have seen...
With Jon Snow there.
Ghost discover it and Jon be in on it.
Mm-hmm.
But
it gives Sam a little more.
Sam and Gren.
Yeah.
And Dolorous Ed?
I think so, yeah.
Dolorous Ed isn't like sad sacky enough for me. He's really? A little more kind of grousy, bittery. Yeah. He's more bitter than sad sack.
Yeah.
I like, want more sad.
They discover this, you know, nice cache, and he's just sitting there still shoveling away.
Chuck would appreciate a sadder sack. That's what I'm getting.
What
out
are
of
we
this.
Talking about here?
Have you ever seen a sadder sack?
Wah, wah.
But good stuff. So it helps establish place.
We know
John's been away from the Fist of the First Men for a while, and it's good to know that the troops or the Night Watch is still there digging in. They're finally getting around to digging some latrines. They've probably been holding it for a while.
Can't they just go down the side of a mountain? I mean, it'll just run down.
For fun.
Right?
Great landscape scenes up there north of the wall. Even though Fist of the First Men ought to be surrounded by dense forest. Just great scenery, man. I mean, you can...
They're walking on the ice or whatever, I guess, when they've got John at the beginning there.
Well, those scenes, yeah, they're good. Exactly. But especially the ones where you can see, like, icy mountains just miles and miles away in the background. And you can just see that, you know, their faces are red and their breath is visible. And you just know that they're really there and you feel like you've been transported to another place. I was starting to feel like this is too much of a jarring contrast with just castle rooms and tents, you know, where you don't really see anything of the countryside hardly at all south of the wall. You get to see, you know, the yard, in Winterfell, the courtyard and various rooms in the Red Keep at King's Landing. But even as I was thinking that, I was hyper aware of it, and there's a couple other good settings, like John and his girlfriend walking through a few trees, and you can see the ocean in the background. And then walking the walls at King's Landing, which I believe is Malta, and there's all kinds of great ocean vistas.
Right.
You can see there from the walls. Some of the castles are real, and some are
digital.
Yeah, but it's pretty seamless and pretty cool looking. What'd you think of the shot of Stannis and his fleet sailing at night? You can see those big sails off in the background.
Yeah. A
little fake looking, but still.
Right, idea.
It was a good epic sense of scale.
Yep. What'd you think? So, pretty good conversation between Stannis and Sir Davos. Pretty book kind of accurate a little bit. I mean,
have they already talked about the Stannis cutting his fingers off and he has the knuckles
a couple
in the
weeks
pouch?
Ago,
didn't they? Yeah, I thought they did,
but they didn't fully explain what he was being punished for, just being punished for having been a smuggler. They didn't connect that and the defense of or you know, the siege of Storm's End and the delivery of the onions
like they did this week, you mean?
Well, They
never really connected it.
They didn't connect the fact that Davos was an outlaw, a smuggler, who delivered this food against his better judgment to save these starving people, knowing that he was sailing into, you know, authority that would potentially
prosecute him for
that would punish him for his past transgressions. And Stannis, who would normally have killed him for having been a smuggler, let him live. I mean, greeted him. Obviously, we see this week that he honored him or had such respect for him based on that event that he's willing to set him as his hand.
Those are mad props from Stannis, man.
Those are mad props.
You gotta earn that. I mean, if I could be elevated to modern knighthood and given a title and some...
What sigil would you select for yourself?
That's not where I was going. Okay. I was going to say, and given some authority and some power, I might give up half of four digits, you know. I don't even really think Stannis was that. You know, Davos saved his life and the lives of others. And how does he repay him? By cutting off his... part of his hand, but
cutting off part of his hand, but raising him up to
raising him
lordship,
on up to lordship, sort of. So yeah,
knighthood,
definitely
to knighthood.
Knighthood,
but now he's saying he's going to raise him to lordship.
Because he's so loyal. No question,
and,
right?
And he trusts him above
Stannis
all.
Rewards loyalty.
Sure. Do you feel that Stannis is warming up to Stannis more than he would in the absence of Melisandre? Like, he's kind of like... When Melisandre was around, he didn't really have that much... He was just all about her.
He kept his distance.
Yeah,
but now
she's almost hypnotic in a way.
In her absence, he's kind of like remembering, oh yeah, you're the guy that I trust. I mean, he really owes Davos's relationship with Salador San for him having a fleet with which to invade in the first place. So it's just reward, really.
Yeah.
One thing that's a little different is he says, if I become king or whatever, or he says, by law or by right, I am king, and you will be my hand.
When I become king.
But really, in the books, he comports himself like he is the king, and he has like a traveling court, and Davos is his hand already.
True.
But maybe that's semantics.
It might be for the audience, possibly. Let's talk about the great horse swap.
It finally paid off all those weeks.
All the Raw's screen time we've had paid off in such a huge way.
Yeah.
And I did see it coming. Not at first, but before her reveal, I realized that it was going to be Roz.
Yeah.
And I all of a sudden felt gratified that they'd given her the screen time that they had.
Because in the book, it's what? Alayaya?
Alayaya. Is it Alayaya? That's
something,
right.
Something.
Or is it Alayaya's daughter with a different similar name?
One of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of those brats. I don't know.
So how about Shay seeming all the way you always wanted her to seem this episode and only this episode?
Yes, good point. Shay finally has an exchange with Tyrion where I didn't want to smack her and tell her to fuck off and go read the books and come back with a different characterization.
I can't decide if it's worse or better, though.
But it's not. It's still not the Shay from the books. Mm-mm. But it is a Shay that has a tender, genuine relationship with Tyrion.
Right.
Which is perhaps more important.
It makes you wonder if when they were showing the episodes, if they were trying to just make sure you knew she was spicy, make sure you knew she was, you know, had some fire in her, but you were supposed to know that it was genuine or not. But
they didn't.
They didn't do it.
She didn't earn her seduction of Tyrion effectively. She didn't earn his devotion the way that the screen time and scenes that they gave her, especially with the characterization that they gave her. But none of that matters anymore. I mean, it's established that Tyrion cares for her, and we've had one tender scene between them that we know that they're intimate and they care for each other, and that's a foundation to build on for wherever the story takes us from here.
Right. We should have gotten there sooner, but here it is.
So what did you think of the events leading up to that, the whole Cersei, yeah, Tyrion?
I loved Cersei in this episode. She was the imperious, superior feeling. She's so smug when she thinks she has the upper hand. I love Tyrion's comment, like, I'd say you have above average intelligence.
There were some pretty good ones this week, yeah.
Yeah, Cersei was great. I loved the scene with Bronn and Tyrion, where, I mean, their whole argument about the gold cloak reinforces, like, oh yeah, don't forget that Bronn is the leader of the Gold Cloaks.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget he's a sellsword.
Don't forget that he's a shrewd warrior, and the reason he doesn't wear the cape is for practical reasons.
Yeah, we kind of touched on that a little bit over a few episodes, and they hit it head on.
I like the little added pronunciation of the maester's name.
That was great. Just invented comedy and storytelling. Very, very clever. It's great. I mean, they established so much with that scene. Like, Tyrion is, you know, was kind of a bookworm. But that's all backstory for Tyrion. Because from the moment we meet him at the beginning of A Game of Thrones, there's very few scenes where he's poring over books or interested in books anymore because he's got so much going on.
Mm-hmm. I think the only time that he maybe talked about that was when he went up to the wall or whatever.
Well, he spends time. Maester Luwin shares Winterfell's library with him.
That's right.
When the king's party comes to visit at the very beginning. And also, he enjoys. The Wall has a great library as well that he gets to dip into a little bit. And doesn't he make a gift of a special book for someone?
Yeah, who does not respect it, Joffrey.
That's right. Yeah, that's
doesn't,
right.
Doesn't he like hack it to pieces in front of him or something?
That sounds entirely possible. He certainly doesn't respect it. Good Joffrey scenes this week, too.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, I'm happy with almost all the characterizations of everything that happened this week. Again, it irks me the way that our beloved field surgeon from Volantis can just stroll into one of King Rob's war councils.
Yeah.
And Roos Bolton timidly defers to her presence and leaves without saying a word. She can just storm in and just and all she has to say is, "So how are you?" You know, that's just so fucked up. That's just not there's a protocol that's being ignored here completely.
My grace, my lord, I'll wait outside. No, get in here. Come on. I was leaving. You just take over. It's cool.
We've got a lot to talk about, but yeah. I mean, my girlfriend's here, so we'll catch up tomorrow.
I mean, I know I'm getting married to someone else, but, you know.
Bolton shouldn't even be there right now with the events that we saw tonight. He should be
doing other things. I mean, Rob effectively spells out all of his worries as a battle commander and, you know, the weight of the responsibility of being a prospective king. She tells her compelling story about how her brother almost dying and being saved by a slave has informed what she has decided to do with her life. That was compelling. But is it compelling enough for Robb Stark to do what he does?
Well, two or three times this episode before they talk, he says, "Well, I want to be a compassionate king. I don't want to be one of those dipshit kings. I want to be a compassionate." And then she tells a story like, "Well, I'm compassionate.
I'm pretty damn compassionate."
And then he just rips her clothes off.
I think the good story that Rob told was when they were walking in the woods, where he talked about his dad and how he felt about managing and being responsible for basically everybody else.
He won her over with that conversation.
Totally.
And she won him over with the one that followed. I get it. And especially because Rob
doesn't want to marry that ugly Walder Frey girl.
Well, because he's feuding with his mother, so he's not. He almost wants to spite her at that point.
Yeah. Maybe. You got to wonder if that hadn't have happened, that event, would he have done what he did?
But he does say, like, "I promised to marry that Frey girl because I was so desperate to save my dad, and that didn't even work, so I don't even give a shit about that bridge or her anymore."
Fuck a bridge, man.
So that's all fairly compelling, good stuff.
Yeah, it was well done.
And again, just as they did with Zero, claiming that he's a Summer Islander, she tells details from the books about the nature of the slaves in Volantis.
With the
tattoos that that's something we don't learn until A Dance with Dragons, right?
Down the road, yeah. I think that's
so
true.
So they're pulling flavor details from the setting that's been established in the books, squeezing them into the story where they can.
I like that.
In interesting ways. I do,
They might as well. I think they could do it more, but they don't. I mean, I don't know what I'm saying. Because there's naked people on the screen again. Well,
I was surprised that she had nudity, too, because her character is just so prideful and pure.
I was too.
I just sort of assumed that the actress also wouldn't agree to do a nude scene, but
I'm glad she did.
No, I'm pretty kind of pissed about it. No, I'm not mad. It's fine.
You wanted to see Rob's dick.
It's gotcha. HBO. That might happen.
You only see Theon and Hodor.
Hodor.
Wait till they have a sword fight. Might happen.
I can't wait.
Varys also drops a detail about the Summer Islanders and their pleasure god with 16 teats.
Mm-hmm. Was it 16 or 6?
It was 16.
He drew it out. Teen.
Yeah. I know how much that'll please you, my perverted liege lord.
Let's get moving.
How about Tyrion this week?
Good stuff. Yeah. Well, I want to go back to the Bronn Tyrion scene.
Yeah, the Bronn Tyrion scene.
The one thing I didn't like about it is it's like they're poring over these books, and then it's like he finally realizes that, oh, here's my big idea that I'm going to use for the defense of...
That's right. He had a...
When he says pig shit, because...
Was he referring to wildfire when he said pig shit? I don't remember.
Because Bronn makes a reference. He just calls it pig shit, I think, at the when they're down talking to the pyromancer guy a couple weeks ago.
That's right. That was a reference that only rewards a sharp-eyed viewer.
Where, I mean, in the books, it's all meticulously pretty much planned, I think, by Tyrion at this point.
Well, we can't say too much.
I wish we would have had the chain.
Yeah, me too. Well,
I thought the chain was clever.
I don't think we...
Did they ever...
I thought maybe he had said something one week, but
did he? I thought they did too, but I think it's because I was reading the synopses.
Last week I was complaining that we weren't seeing Tyrion really trying that hard to prepare the city for the siege.
He wasn't being a strategist or anything else.
Because it's like all
he
does.
They dedicated a whole scene to it this week. I mean, he didn't reveal what his big idea is, but we know that it has something to do with wildfire. I guess maybe that's clever enough.
And the mud gate, probably.
The mud gate.
Because he does pull out the map.
I would have liked it if they would have had the thing where they describe how all of the port front dwellings
need to be
burned. These buildings have grown up along the exterior walls of King's Landing.
Go wreck all that shit.
Yeah. And he goes and orders all those buildings burned just for the defense, which
I did like the
good stuff.
The Bronn stuff where it's like, you know, there's the drop in crime and Bronn says, well, we rounded up all the known thieves and killed them.
He says, what's Bronn's little monologue about, have you ever been in a city under siege? He talks about how the wealthiest highborn woman will sell her jewels for bread.
A sack of potatoes.
The thieves become rich because they steal the food. Yeah.
So his logic is we have gold, to kill the thieves off so that they don't rip off the poor, the rich people.
Well,
I don't quite get that explanation. I thought, you know, killing the thieves is just a good brutal thing to do when you're the Lord Commander of the of the Gold Cloaks. But he's saying it's just, boy, I sure hate it when you're in a city that's under siege and the thieves make too much money. So I had this bright idea of killing them all first.
Well, I think it's all because if the thieves have all the money, the only people that can afford to even get any are the rich folk.
Well,
so then you have all the poor people, I mean, pissed off at you, even though it's
starving.
Yeah. And starving and eating themselves.
And eating high septons. Putting them in a pot of brown down in Flea Bottom.
There's a lot of talk.
Flea Bottom way.
There's a lot of talk in this episode about eating less desirable things. And
is there? What else?
Horses. And Stannis talks about horse and cat. And he's like, he likes dogs, so he kind of loyal, felt bad. But he
ate them last.
Yeah.
This is a great scene. How just you were speaking of landscapes and wide shots, that kind of thing, where you can actually see the environment.
And I guess somewhere, I think it's when Tyrion and Cersei are talking, where, you know, they're talking about Joffrey going out and, you know, he should go out and fight with the men.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, you know, what is he, 17? I mean, you see some of the age adjustment, obviously, from the books, because in the books he's, what, like 12 or something?
And he says, remember Jaime at 17? Which is that's like a year after he joined the Kingsguard.
Right. Better than you. She was on the ball this episode. She understood him. She was more of a tactician than he was. He got caught with his pants down. He played it cool, but she's like, you just think you're through your cock. This is where it's going to get you. And
he didn't really get caught. But
she had the upper hand.
They both thought that he was caught for a while.
Right.
She does, but not in the way that she thinks she does.
That's true. But she gave him a run there. He was nervous.
Do you think, because Tyrion, so he goes up to Roz and kind of has a little conversation, which in the book, I mean, he like really feels bad about that she gets...
Well, he did sleep with Roz way back in the pilot episode. And did he give her a lion's necklace back in the pilot?
Shit.
That's the last time we've seen those two together.
Man, I don't remember.
I wonder.
Cue it up.
Because if so, then from the very first episode, they decided her character's story arc. We didn't need to see half of what she's done in the in between, but still, well played.
So back to the conversation you were talking about with Varys and...
Yeah, Varys and Tyrion.
About playing the game, playing the game.
Varys, of Thrones. We're reminded that some people in Westeros are aware of Dany's existence. And for the first time, Varys divulges that she has dragons. Tyrion doesn't believe the dragons. He rolls his eyes a little bit. Doesn't even have to say, I don't believe there's dragons. I mean, even that. There's just a lot of good, smart choices. They really are giving the audience some credit for filling in the blanks, I think, this week.
This week, agreed. There was a lot of snappy, very quick retort dialogue, too, that wasn't super obvious, everything about it. There was a little bit of subtlety to it and a little winkiness. So,
speaking of winkies...
Well, I didn't even... And speaking of Daenerys, I didn't even think we were going to see Daenerys this episode until, boom, she pops on with, like, the last minute and a half.
Well, you brought up the DVR timeline to see how much episode was left when we see her, like, peeking through the branches of something.
We're like, what?
I was like, is she at the gate of the House of the Undying? Is she about to walk in? Are we going to get this now? But there's still two episodes to go. I don't think we're going to get that till the final episode.
Yeah, I think...
The next week's going to be all about the Battle of the Blackwater, which we thought was going to happen this week.
Hey, you sure about that? Let's take some bets.
I'm sure about that.
How soon after the episode starts do you think we're going to see the battle? Do you think it's going to come in opening like... You know how they do in movies when you hear like the screen is still black and you hear a giant crash? And then the screen flashes, smash cuts right to the action.
Well, the scenes from next week that we saw were pretty compelling, and they were all battle-oriented.
They were. I still wonder how much of the episode it's going to entail.
Well,
I guess they can always cut out to somewhere across the Narrow Sea.
I think we'll see what happens with Jon and Corin Halfhand, what happens with them next.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll see what happens with Arya's escape from Harrenhal. Otherwise, I think it's all going to be King's Landing siege-oriented action. Maybe we'll see Daenerys about to step through the door as they're
closing like the end of the episode.
Shot. Exactly.
I wonder. An hour of combat would be a lot of, well, money and a lot of screen time.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they have shied away from any epic battle scenes up to this point. I have a feeling if there's any place they're going to do it, it's going to be here.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to be on the scale that anyone has imagined from having read those events in the books, but I think we'll be duly impressed.
It's a big deal. This is a big...
Whatever they do, it's going to raise the stakes, raise the bar from everything that's come before on this show. We know that Tyrion's not going to get knocked out and miss the whole thing. I love that there's a good tracking shot, like looking up at him marching along in front of the troops with his armor on.
And him giving his... You see him giving his little speech, I guess.
He gives his speech, and it's kind of comically blunt, but it's great. It's like,
there's some guys
that
want to kill us.
Out there. Let's go kill them.
Yeah. Not eloquent, but that's okay.
I mean, he's got the eloquence in him, but he's in that moment. He's
just...
His blood is
up. He's probably like, oh, shit, I might go get killed out here. So,
what about Daenerys' hand on Jorah's cheek?
No, I think I thought he was going to move in for a kiss.
I read on the Onion AV Club, they do great episode recaps. There's a one for people who have not read the books, right, and one for those
who
have.
You sent that out, I think, too.
Two different reviewers write them, so there's two different points of view. And one of them was complaining that there's no chemistry between Jorah and Daenerys.
I read that in the episode from last week.
What do you guys agree with that?
I just don't think they've...
I think it's one way, and since it's only one way, it's completely kept under wraps. Yeah, I don't think there's really anything.
But I mean, I think...
But I mean, they meant like chemistry between the actors or something. Yeah, I think that's what they're talking about. There should be a palpable attraction.
I think you know, there's plenty of chemistry.
On Sir Jorah's part, there ought to be a palpable attraction. And there ought to be palpable affection on her part, if not lust.
She had some second thoughts in the book. Yeah, she really had at least one part of one chapter, whole chapter almost, where she was just like, this guy.
Some of Daenerys' chapters are border on like romance novel.
That's true.
Like, she goes on a sexual awakening. she has some sexual adventures that are colorfully described.
They're going to be a whole offshoot, Daenerys' sexual adventures.
Sex in by the George City.
Season 1, Karth? Episode 1.
Was this a episode George R. R. Martin did, or is that next week?
Battle of the Blackwater, he wrote that. What about Jorah saying, I found a ship that will take us to Astapor? That's some good foreshadowing of sorts there. Unless Daenerys dies in the House of the Undying. So, maybe Jorah will go there.
We don't know.
Maybe after they're both dead, we'll just follow that sea captain to Astapor and find out what Astapor is all about.
We might take some onions there. I don't know. And I guess what the last really scene from tonight was where we see Maester Luwin out in the square at Winterfell looking at the bodies, and he catches a glimpse of someone familiar.
Doesn't he see her first?
Yeah, no.
Then he goes and checks out let me look at these bodies.
They make eye contact, though.
Yeah.
Like, she's trying to be sneaky. She's not being good at it. Mm-mm. If she can be spotted by someone just in the courtyard.
Jeez, come on.
Which is bad.
It is.
But it's after he sees her, he goes over and stares at the legs of one of the corpses, which is kind of paying homage to the fact that Luwin knew from the beginning that it wasn't Bran and Rickon, because the legs of the body were not atrophied the way that Bran's were. But anyway, so then he goes and visits Osha and the boys in the crypts where they've been hiding, apparently. After having escaped from Winterfell, then they snuck back in. I don't know about that. I mean, they could have just gone to hide down there in the first place.
Well, I mean,
they did. They gave a trail for them to follow to get out of there. Is that what happened in the books?
I don't think. You just find out that they pop out of the crypts at some point.
Did they just send the wolves out? And is it the wolves?
Yeah, I think they're kind of tracking, and they're just
tracking the wolves. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure.
Did they bring the wolves back down into the crypts with them? We don't know. Though you never know what's up with the wolves, because they're just not really there.
But I mean, you said last week when we saw him walking, you know, by the farm, and I said, are they going to be back in Winterfell? He said, oh, they're gone.
I thought once they were out, and they'd be making their way north or something by now.
But I guess in events to come, I guess it kind of be important to
you. I think we will get to see the scene when they come up out of the crypts and what they find when that happens. Will that be next week? We did hear from Roose Bolton that his bastard is only a few days away from Winterfell. I think we might get some of that next week as well.
Because, there's two episodes, so next week the episode title is The Blackwater Bay. Then the final episode is the, Valgar Morghulis or whatever. The two words that...
Valar Morghulis.
That Jaqen tells...
Well, we'll see.
Tells nobody to something.
Our non-spoiler spoilers are great. Valar Dohaeris.
We spoiled it for those North Korean bots.
They'll have no idea what's happening. What do you think, fellas? Did we cover it all?
Did we miss anything?
Yep. I mean, yeah, we missed something. But we covered it.
All right, then.
We did a good job.
We will be back next week for an action-packed episode. Very excited.
And an action-packed podcast after, a promise. Definitely will blow your mind.
Phil will be back refreshed after his trip to Denver?
Denver.
He won't be refreshed. There's nothing thrilling about Denver. Sorry, Denver listeners.